Hello, everyone, and welcome to Freedom Feature. And I'm your host, Barry Bussey. With me today, I have Ken Drysdale, who's been the chair of the commissioners at the NCI. Ken, thanks so much for joining us.
Well, thanks very much for asking me.
Well, you know, Ken, I tell you, a lot of us across the country have been watching what has been going on with NCI. There's so much to talk about, but for those few people who are yet to know what NCI is about, can you tell us, first of all, why not just tell us a little bit about yourself, and then let's get into what has been going on with NCI.
Well, talking about me isn't the most exciting part, but I guess people would want to know a little bit about who they're talking about. I'm a husband. I'm a father of six. I'm a grandfather of five. We just welcomed a new granddaughter into our family. As a matter of fact, last night at midnight, I got back from California where she lives.
Wow, congratulations.
Yep. Absolutely, yep. Just wonderful. Professionally, I am a professional engineer with over four decades of experience. I have run national engineering firms. I have created engineering firms. I've invented things that were being used in the Arctic to this day. I semi-retired about 8 years ago, and I started a welding company.
All right.
A lot of what I did over the course of my career was what they call forensic engineering. And what that means is something goes wrong, something doesn't work, something falls down, something blows up, somebody gets hurt, and they would hire me to figure out exactly what went wrong and to testify to that in court or in an insurance investigation or in some other type of dispute. So the expertise that I brought to this thing was the experience with writing detailed technical reports, doing a complicated analysis. And that's exactly what the whole NCI, or what NCI stands for, is the National Citizens Inquiry. And people can go to www.nationalcitizensinquiry.ca, and you can get a description of what we did and who we are. But what the National Citizens Inquiry was, it was a very broad-based investigation of exactly what happened in Canada. Mm-hmm. And when I say exactly what happened, what I mean is we traveled from coast to coast in Canada, starting in about March of 2023. We went to eight cities from coast to coast and spent three full days hearing the testimony of various witnesses in all those cities. And we actually received testimony from 305 witnesses. The commission was set up very similar to a court atmosphere or royal commission, and there were witnesses that came forward and they testified what happened and what happened to them under oath. They were questioned by lawyers and cross-examined by lawyers, and then they were cross-examined by the four commissioners. And so I was the chairman of the four commissioners. The commissioners were chosen from across the country, from various geographical areas, and various areas of expertise. One of the commissioners is a fellow by the name of Dr. Bernard Massey. He's from Quebec. He is a retired National Research Council researcher. Another one was a lawyer, Heather DiGregorio from Calgary. And the other, commissioner, apart from myself, is Janice Kokakin. She's involved with the social sciences, children's education, etc., from Ontario. So we chose these people from across the country with various types of expertise, because the commission was very far-reaching. Like we weren't told that we were limited between certain borders. All that we were instructed was we needed to write a report based on the testimony of the witnesses. And with 305 witnesses, ranging from folks who were doctors, to researchers, to people that drove a percolator truck, from people that worked at CN, husbands, housewives, fathers, brothers, sisters. The only limitation was what we heard testimony on. So the report is an incredibly broad testimony as to what happened in Canada. And it's contemporaneous because we heard that testimony from March to May of last in 2023. Mm-hmm. And it touched just about all the areas of Canadian life. And as a result, the report was massive, but we also were aware of that. And we designed it in a very unique way so that people should not feel intimidated. And we've actually laid breadcrumbs throughout the report for people to follow. And just to give some statistics, you know, the report, the analysis or the report body is 643 pages. Mm-hmm. And appended to that or added to that was almost 4,700 pages of actual transcripts of every single witness that testified. And so that was a total report of 5,342 pages. So it was a massive report. But, you know,
wow.
Yeah. Again, we broke it up into 11 sections, and we have a tremendous table of contents in it. And the table of contents, if you download the report, and you can download it, by the way, for free from the National Citizens Inquiry website. You don't even have to sign up or anything. You go to the www.nationalcitizensinquiry.ca and go to the hearings page, and you can click on it in a couple mm-hmm. of different formats. If you get it as electronic version, that table of contents is interactive. So, you know, if you see a topic that you like, you click on it and it takes you to that section. So you don't have to wade through a 5,000 page document. Now we actually just issued a video instructing folks how to navigate the document. And we actually have the document on the screen, and folks could find that on our website and on our Rumble page. It's really interesting. And just to put a cap on that, I always, because it's in 11 sections, I always tell folks the first two sections you should read are section 9 and section 10. Section 9 is the conclusions overall, and it's only like 4 pages long. Right. And then section 10 is a statement, a heartfelt statement from the commissioners to the people of Canada, and it's about 4 pages long as well. And then once you've read that, you go to section 8. And what section 8 is, it's an extremely detailed, categorized listing of all of our recommendations. And there's almost 400 recommendations, and they're categorized into different areas like, I'm just looking on my other screen here, medical practice and ethics during COVID, public workplaces and pandemic measures, denial of medical treatment, Canadian justice system, the Constitution, coercion. Mm. So you go to section 8, and it's just a listing of those things. You find something you're interested in. Let's say you're interested in the effects of sustained propaganda and terror. Mm. You go to section 8. There's probably 10 or 15 recommendations under that heading. And then what you do is you go to section 7 under the same number. So if you were looking at in section 8, I'm just going to look, there's a section 8.21, neglect and isolation of seniors. So when you read the recommendations there, you go to section 7 and it would be 7.21, and it's neglect and isolation of seniors. But in 7, we'd go through all of the discussion and all the testimony, and we go through our reasoning as to how we came up with these recommendations, and we explain the reasons for it. So once you finish those, you can go back again to the table of contents and look for something else you're interested in. Again, just go from section 8 to section 7, and it really brings it down into bite-sized pieces that people can manage to go through.
It's almost like an encyclopedia, being able to take those bite-sized pieces.
Yeah, you know, you're exactly right. This is an encyclopedic, and I'm going to use some words, big words here. It's a contemporaneous, which means it's contemporary and it's fresh, but it's also an encyclopedic history of what happened in Canada, mm-hmm. using Canadians' own words. Like I said, their full transcripts are there. So you can actually read exactly what these people said. And if you're really not into that, you can go to the website, and every single one of these witnesses has a video. Mm-hmm. And so when you go to the website, www.nationalcitizensinquiry.ca, and you go to hearings, it lists all the 8 cities, and you click on a city, and then it goes through, gives you a list by name and topic of each of the witnesses and for each of the 3 days. And when you click on that, each one of those witnesses has their own webpage. And So you'll see the video of their testimony, you'll see their individual transcript, and you'll see a summary. So you can watch videos all day. And, you know, I have to tell people, and I challenge them, and this might sound preposterous, but it's absolutely true. There was 305 witnesses, and I challenge your listeners, go to the website and pick three testimonies. I'm not telling you which ones, and I'm not saying from which cities. Just pick three and watch them. And I will guarantee it will change your life.
You know, there's been, I think, a lack of understanding or empathy towards those who suffered terribly under the whole COVID regime. And I think the inhumanity of man to man at that time frame, you know, whether it's dealing with bureaucracies who were basically faceless, not being willing to discuss issues in a manner that one would expect. Like, for example, I had a number of students who would come to me and needed help with just filling out the application forms for exemptions to attend university with an exemption for so that they didn't have to have the vaccine. And they tried many times to engage faculty, engage the bureaucrats at the universities, and they would receive emails from the bureaucratic regime, and there was no name on that email. It was just as if it were just spit out by a computer. And that lack of a sense that there was a person on the other side that was listening to them was something that was really painful for these students as they faced, you know, some of them weren't able to graduate that year and had to wait until the pandemic or the vaccine mandates and so forth were lifted before they could get back to finish. And it was just this sense, as I was chatting with them, you know, just this sense of isolation. And that is something that, you know, with the NCI, we're able to uncover and let people speak and share their story.
Yeah, that was one of the most powerful things. You really hit it on here. I just made a note because one of the words that you used that really struck me was faceless. And isn't that what they did to us? They put these cloth masks on our face, which they knew did not work. And I don't say that lightly. They wrote, most folks don't understand, but the Canadian government had what was called the Canadian Influenza Pandemic Plan that was initially prepared in 2006 by the same people that enforced these COVID rules. And in that 2006 pandemic plan, they said that face masks don't work. They said that isolation doesn't work. They said that quarantines don't work. They actually did the opposite of everything that they had in that plan. And it was the same people. Theresa Tam was the major author of that report, along with most of the other people who were involved in what happened in 2020 through 2023. So, you know, this mask that they made us all wear, that we knew did not work in order to prevent the disease, was used to make us inhuman, to make it so that people could treat you inhumanly. You know, I can tell you stories from the NCI, and I went into the NCI knowing a fair bit. I a year prior to, the way I got onto this path was about a year prior to the NCI, so I think it was in 2022, I wrote a report that became quite famous. It was called, the people ended up calling it the 89-page report, and folks could find that on the internet. It's been downloaded and copied worldwide somewhere around 2.5 to 3 million times now. It was delivered by Canadians tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of times, to every politician, every police station in Canada. And so I thought, naively, I thought I had a fairly good handle on what happened. But going into the commission and you know, being one of the four people in this country who we know of who actually listened to every single second of all 305 witnesses, mm-hmm. I have to say, I had no idea of what happened. You know, we heard stories, sworn testimony, by the way, by ordinary Canadians. You know, I spoke personally to Sheila Lewis. And it still breaks my heart. And for those of your listeners who don't know who Sheila Lewis is, she was an Alberta woman who needed a lung transplant. And she had been in the system for about a year, year and a half. And it was down to the summer and fall of 2022. And that's very important, that date. The doctors had lost, or the medical system had lost, her childhood vaccination records. So she went out and got all of her childhood vaccinations. Come the summer and fall of 2022, she's the next in line to get the lung transplant. And they say to her, you need to have the COVID shot. Mm. Well, she was terrified of the COVID shot for good reason. There were people in her family who had severe reactions. Mm-hmm. So you had Sheila Lewis. She went to a laboratory. She got tested and she had antibodies to COVID-19. So she didn't need the COVID shot. And you remember I said it was important to remember this was in the summer and fall of 2022. We already knew the COVID vaccines were dangerous. They didn't prevent infection. They didn't prevent spread. But because she refused to take this shot, they removed her from the transplant list. And she died. They executed, in my opinion, Sheila Lewis. And they need to be, you know, I hear people all the time, Ken, are you still talking about COVID-19? Well, they committed murder, in my opinion. And we're supposed to walk away from that, you know. I heard testimony from a lady, and it's heartbreaking. I mean, you had to be there. And all these testimonies are videoed, and they're on the NCI website. There was a lady in testified, I think it was in Saskatoon, and she told of how her mother was over visiting her and her children, and it was about lunchtime, and the mother decided she was going to go to the local drugstore in Saskatoon and get her needle, her COVID shot. Well, as the mother drove away, the two ladies were texting back and forth, you know, like mom and daughters mm-hmm. do. And the mother said she was in line at the drugstore and there was a lineup of people waiting. Anyway, she waited and she queued up to the front and they took her behind the little screen and they stuck the needle in her arm. And a minute or two or three later, she dropped dead on the floor. Yeah. And no one in that line got out of line. Not a single person. No one got out of the line when they see this lady get a needle in her arm, fall down dead. And it wasn't until sometime later that the daughter's texting her mother, hey, mom, where are you? To find out that she's lying dead. So, you know, there were horrendous stories of old people being locked away for 3, 4, 5 weeks at a time alone with Alzheimer's disease, going absolutely mad. You know, in my own family, my father-in-law had Alzheimer's at the time and he thought he was in prison and no one could visit him. You know, they'd kind of stick food under the table under the door for him, kind of thing. And businesses went broke. Families broke up. To this day, some children aren't speaking to their parents and vice versa. It broke up families. It destroyed businesses. It almost destroyed Canada. You know, the national debt of Canada went from about just under $700 billion to $1.2 or $1.3 trillion. The devastation is unprecedented.
Yeah, and it's something that's going to take absolutely generations if we ever get out of it. But you know, coming back to Sheila Lewis, I can't help it. Today I heard that Charlie Angus is retiring, the NDP member of parliament. And he wrote a tweet dealing with this experience of Sheila. And I'm going to read it because I think it's extremely important for everyone to kind of like take stock. It's been a few months now, a number of months. But, you know, when she passed away, he said on a tweet, he says, a woman died because she preferred to fight for disinformation, anti-vax bullshit, and conspiracy. And Pierre Poilievre says he is a hero and supports a candidate so bogus that Doug Ford kicked him out. And it's that condescending attitude that we have seen over and over again. Absolutely no concern, no care, but this like in your face approach to people who have a different view than you. And it's just like, I've, you know, over the years, I mean, I followed Charlie Angus's career, and while he's NDP, and obviously I'm not a supporter of, I love the history of the NDP in the sense that it had a, I think a very altruistic beginning, you know, when you think of Tommy Douglas and his spiritual bent and the importance for social gospel and all that kind of thing. But when he made that comment, it was like, you got to be kidding me. Really? You've come to the end of your career and this is the kind of stuff you just spew out? I just, you know, it still blows me away. And it's that that sense of that inhumanity that we've experienced. And so your commission really brought this to the front and say, hey, look, people suffered here.
Yeah. I mean, and you're right, you know, and it's an interesting thing. And we don't have to get into this, but it's just an interesting thing that the government is currently trying to pass a law, Bill C-63. And I just happened to have it on my screen. And by the way, folks, we didn't rehearse this, but I'm just reading that it's talking about content that incites violent extremism or terrorism. Mm-hmm. And one of the item C in this new legislation is a serious risk to the health or safety of the public or any section of the public. So that is an indictable offense under this new law. And you can be fined $10 million, by the way.
$10 million?
Yeah, the fines are commensurate to what you earn. And so they're a percent of your global earnings up to $10 million.
Right,
so,
right. Of the social media providers, right?
That's right,
exactly. Okay, I got you now.
And so my point is this. Everybody remembers the term safe and effective, right?
Right.
The government told us over and over again that the vaccines were safe and effective. And I have to apologize. I'm looking over my shoulder here. I've got a second screen. And we did a whole section in the NCI report about exactly how the government approved the COVID-19 vaccines. And for those of you who don't know, under the food and drug regulations, there's a whole bunch of things that a new food or drug has to go through. And these tests have to be proven what they call objectively. Mm. For those who don't know what I mean by that, I'll give you an example. An objective question might be, what is 2 + 2? And the objective answer is 4. It has an answer. It has a single answer. 2 + 2 = 4. A subjective question and a subjective answer might be, how do you feel about 2 + 2? Well, I don't like it because So that's how they approved these drugs. They exempted them, the COVID-19 vaccines, from proving safety and effectiveness objectively. And they said, if you could conclude that they're safe and effective, you can approve them. And they approved them under an interim order. And when that interim order expired a year later, they then rewrote the regulations, which still to this day, you can go look, have exempted COVID-19 vaccines from proving that they're safe or that they're effective. Mm. So I say all of that because when I look at these anti-hate laws or anti-safety laws or whatever they put the label on them, they did exactly those things to Canadians on a mass scale.
Massive. Yeah.
And you know that the narrative is so crumbling now. You know that the CDC in the United States about 6 months ago released information that said that the number one side effect of the COVID-19 vaccines was getting COVID-19. And you would get it within the first 14 days. Well, do you remember how they said you weren't fully vaccinated until after 14 days?
Yeah.
I mean, it's incredible what they had done.
And then to have the prime minister say that, you know, he's going to ensure that no one who's unvaccinated will sit next to a vaccinated person on an airplane or on a train or in all the rest of it, because he's concerned about Canadians.
And how stupid is that? When the injection's supposed to protect you from getting COVID, you can't sit next to somebody.
Yeah.
It was in legal terms, I think they call that insanity on the face of it. You know, you don't have to look really deep to see
And the sad part of all of this is, of course, is that the courts have been like, oh, we're not scientists, so we don't want to be involved in, you know, dealing with the whole COVID, you know, analysis and all the rest of it. And it's like, but yet the courts have dealt with, you know, issues of science for years, including the Supreme Court making a statement when they made the reference on the carbon tax issue, said that climate change is real, or words to that effect. So they, you know, accepting a statement on science, and it's just beyond any doubt.
Well, you know, a really telling thing that happened that folks might not remember, but our Chief Justice, Justice Wagner, during the whole trucker convoy, and I'm not getting into how you felt about the trucker convoy, that's irrelevant. What's relevant here is that this Supreme Court justice made a statement that the trucker convoy was an illegal gathering, and there had been no charges and there had been no convictions that it was illegal. As a matter of fact, there was a court case going on in Ottawa at the time because of the honking. Yeah. And the judge ruled, if you stop honking, you can continue with your legal protest.
Right.
And yet the Supreme Court of Canada Chief Justice was calling it an illegal gathering. So that tells you where the mindset is of these judges.
Yeah. I've written at length on that one. And I hear you.
I mean, you know, folks don't understand, and maybe we've lost touch a little bit with some of our basic fundamentals in our society, and we're talking about the judiciary right now. But, you know, we had a witness on the stand, brilliant international law professor by the name of Gail Davidson, and I believe she was testifying in British Columbia and Vancouver. And one of the questions I asked her, just to bring it down so that people could understand that our judiciary has kind of gone off somewhere, I said to her, Miss Professor Davidson, can you tell me how you address a judge when you go into court? And she looked at me and she said, well, it depends on what court. I said, just let's say King's Court. Well, how do you address the judge? Do you say, hello, Bob? And she says, well, of course not. You say, Your Honor, or Justice. One of those terms. I said, why do you do that? And she said to me, well, you're showing respect to the judge. And I said, isn't that only half of it? And she said, what do you mean? I said, by saying Your Honor to the judge, aren't you reminding that judge of their incredible responsibility to the public? And you're reminding them that they're supposed to be honorable, and they're supposed to be fair, and they're supposed to be rule of law in our country. Right. Isn't that at least as important? And we've gotten so far away from what those fundamental principles are that we've forgotten what they are. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've kind of come full circle. A lot of the folks know, are very familiar with, you know, the Lady Justice. She has a blindfold on. Yes. She has a scale, and she has a sword. And the understanding today is that blindfold means that she will make judgments that are just and not biased. There you go. But you know what that blindfold really meant? That symbology came out in the 1600s, and that blindfold meant that she was blind to the injustices being carried out against the people. That was the original meaning. And we've come full circle on that, haven't we?
Yeah, we sure have. Yeah, you know, it's just an amazing experience as a lot of people want to because they've had such struggles, they want to ignore that experience or put it behind them. But I think it's extremely important for us to recognize that, no, we have to keep this before us because we don't want to repeat what we have just gone through. And we've had so much pressure. And obviously it was internationally wide. I mean, it was global. And
yes, it was.
And this kind of thing, I think we have to get back to the roots of what made our society great, in the sense of, the respect, as you mentioned, but also recognizing the fundamental values of seeking truth, and I should say virtues, really, rather than values, because values are too subjective. And I agree with my good friend, Professor Ian Benson, on this issue of values. I mean, to me, you know, everyone can have a value, and it's just, you know, we're using an economic term for issues of morality. Well, no, we need to get back to, I think, the concept of virtues. It's this recognition that as human beings, we have inviolability. We are, our civilization have recognized that there was a certain sacredness about human beings in and of themselves. And today we are seeing the absolute opposite of that. And I think in some ways, the experience we faced is an experience that could only come about when society at large has been, I guess, conditioned over the last number of decades that, you know, human beings are no different than any other creature on earth. And if anything, we're horrible creatures. And it's okay to violate them. It's okay to demand that they follow the dictates of government and all the rest of it. And I think we've really got to question this kind of attitude, because we're moving now into a new mindset where even the whole transhumanism concepts are coming. And I think, you know, if we don't watch it, people will be questioning the even concept of humanity. And I think that's part of what's going on here. And so it's much deeper and philosophical and more, I think, scary kind of development that's going on in our society. And I think the COVID experience just shows you what can happen. And all of these various comments from various bureaucrats, from even, you know, our justice, as you pointed out. I mean, it's just like, hold on here now. We need to step back a little bit and look at what's happening. When you have treated people like this for so long, and you basically can them into their little homes, or they're not allowed to literally see one another's face anymore, and people have just had enough of it. And that was one of the, the outcomes is that people just revolted, and I think rightly so.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. You know, and the scary to me, what's going on now is even scarier. Look at the government of Canada spent $1.3 billion alone on the CBC to give you 24/7 terror. Yep. Lies, pandemic terror, calling you names. You know, in Manitoba, it's interesting. They had a snitch line in Manitoba. Mm. But of course, you can't call it a snitch line. You know, people would be phoning in and telling on their neighbors or doing this. But you know what they called it? They called it an ambassador's line. You phone the ambassador's line in Manitoba to snitch on your neighbor. Yeah. You know, what's up is down. What's down is up. What's left is right. It's an incredible thing, and everybody in it suffered. The people who got the shot suffered, and they're suffering now, and the people that didn't get the shot, they're suffering, and these families have been split apart, and lifelong friendships have been, we need to heal that.
Yes.
But healing it doesn't mean you know, putting your fingers in your ears or your hands over your eyes and whistling like you're going past a cemetery at night, pretending it didn't happen. Mm. You know, we've learned, you know, we spent, I don't know how many millions and millions of dollars on the Truth and Reconciliation Commission for what happened in with the indigenous peoples in this country. Mm-hmm. We can't have reconciliation on this without the truth coming out. And by the way, without justice being served. I mean, look at what the medical profession did. Mm-hmm. You know, what happened to informed consent?
Yeah, really.
And people really need to understand that informed consent is a law, and it has two basic components to it. There's lots in it, but there's two basic components. The first component is what a lot of people understand, that the doctor's supposed to tell them all the information that the doctor has, at least enough so that the patient can make a decision. That's part of it. Mm-hmm. But the other part of it that's just as important is the doctor is required to make a determination whether or not they feel that the patient is under any kind of influence or coercion that might be influencing their decision to take the medication or the procedure. Mm-hmm. And if they have the inkling that that's the case, they can't give the procedure. In other words, they violated this most fundamental law in our country. Mm. So where are the arrests? Where is the penalty phase for these colleges of physicians and surgeons? And Ontario was one of the worst. Ontario published a paper during COVID that said, if you have a patient that comes in, doesn't want to take the COVID-19 vaccine, you might want to consider prescribing drugs to them to relax them, or counseling to get them to take it. That's coercion on the face of it.
Yeah, I mean, that's incredible. It's right. Yeah. And then the treatment that they're causing the physicians who were just even a wee bit critical on their Twitter feed or whatever, and then threatening them with basically the end of their careers and taking away their licensing and all the rest of it is like,
it wasn't just doctors, by the way. That happened to me. I got hauled before a board and they said, what are you saying? Mm. And I said, I won't tell you what I said, but if you know what, I'm not going to pretend that I'm any kind of brave person or hero, but you know, I'm 65, 66 years old and my career is pretty much wound down. I still do some things in my career, but I could say to them, no. But if I was 21 years old, starting my career with a wife and children at home, I may not have been able to do that. And that's one of the problems that Canadians face, is that they had to make these real life, real time decisions. And now they're looking back and they're seeing that they were lied to, the most basic and fundamental lies that affected every aspect of their life. And some people don't know what to do with that. Some people are building up this horrible anger inside them that we need to relieve. Mm-hmm. Some people are trying to turn away and pretend it didn't happen.
I know.
It's an incredible thing that's going on in this country and around the world.
Yep. I mean, I have a number of people who have come to me, and unfortunately, I myself ended up ultimately, you know, starting up First Freedoms Foundation as, you know, to be a voice as well. And I think as many voices as possible is important. And you know, the ability of being able to take on cases is what I've always wanted to be able to do. But at the end of the day, I found, you know, it was very difficult to, you know, raise money to be able to take people's cases. So I did some things, you know, on a pro bono basis. But then as we looked at the various cases going through court, you know, you're seeing a number of people who have been so pounded by the court decisions for costs. And I mean, these are people who've lost their employment. Many of them have lost their houses, and then to be saddled with costs. And I've never seen anything like this kind of use of costs against people who have suffered so much. And so it's now to the point where I tell people, look, You know, you can go ahead and go to court, but the chances are, at least right now, the courts are just not at all interested in your story. They're not at all interested in trying to find a way forward here on this. They've basically have written this off. And if you insist on going forward, you're going to end up with a huge, horrendous cost against you. And as a lawyer, I can't conscientiously provide you with pro bono work when I know full well you're going to get hammered with costs. And so I just have had to disengage, and I feel bad about doing that, but I'm trying to protect them as well, in the sense that, you know, but so then it becomes now necessary for an education. And I think this is why the NCI is so important. I think it's people need to understand this. And I think the anger and the frustration that people have had, and rightly so, because they've lost their houses, because they've lost their jobs and all the rest of it, and they look at their colleagues who have, you know, carried on with their careers and sometimes even done better because they were willing to compromise. And fine, okay, so if their consciences were not bothered, like the individuals that I have talked to, but and they look at that and they just say, well, no, hold on there. I mean, why is it that I have to suffer? And now, because of all of the information that has come out about the vaccine and how it wasn't effective, even though, you know, you like you say, you'll have the college here in Ontario say that it was and all the rest of it, because and yet you've got very reputable individuals and skilled, well-practiced physicians and academics who say otherwise, you know, these people are saying, well, this is wrong. And so there is this anger, and how do we deal with it? It strikes me that we have to, as a society, say, hey, listen, we've got to understand the pain that has been felt here. And that's why I think the NCI was willing to be that outlet.
Yeah, and you know, the NCI, the National Citizens Inquiry, has kind of become a pressure relief valve in a way. Mm-hmm. You know, the courts, believe it or not, the courts are supposed to be a pressure relief valve. You know, mm-hmm. If your citizenry can't rely on getting a fair and even judgment in a court, regardless of their standing in society, mm-hmm. then what have you left them with as a choice? You've left them with the choice of being violent or taking things in their own hands. Yeah. So the courts, in having not just the perception of fairness, but actually providing fairness and providing access to justice, a word that we've forgotten in Western democracies these days, by providing that, they're also providing a pressure relief valve for what you and I both see building in this country, this seething anger and this doubt of all institutions. Because let's face it, all of our institutions failed. Unions failed their members. They didn't protect their members. Yeah. The banks froze your accounts. They never even got a legal opinion before they did that. They just did it. Yep. You know, companies stopped allowing you to come into the stores. Your banks are kicking you out now. I've known people who've gotten notice for no reason. They're just not going to do business with them anymore. That's devastating in this society. And it should be illegal, quite frankly. Yeah. So, you know, these people, the same people that have forgotten that the reason you address a judge with your honor is not just to bow down, but to remind them of the responsibility, they've also forgotten that the legal system is an extremely important relief, pressure relief for society. Because if people can't rely on the rule of law, they'll start to take law into their own hands.
And that has been shown over and over and over again. And if we think we are immune to that, history says otherwise. And it's a sobering thought. And it's something that, you know, I have I still take a very optimistic view that eventually, you know, jurists and others in the country will, you know, come to an understanding with respect to this. And I am hopeful that as time goes on, as people look at it, you know, as history is going to be written on this, that people will say, you know what was done back there in that time was unacceptable, and we need to learn from it. And I'm hopeful that that comes. And I think it's important for your organization, the NCI, to have done the work that it has. There's, I know time is going by on us, and I don't want to exceed the patience of our listeners. I'm sure there are some who are saying, no, keep it going. And so I think it's important for us to keep it going. So I'd like to have you back, but I'm just wondering, is there some thought, as we've talked now for close on to 45 minutes, any closing thought that you would like to leave to our listeners today?
You know, one of the things I keep being asked over and over again is, Ken, what do you think this report is going to do? Do you think it's going to save us? People think that you write a report and it gets legs on its own and it goes out and does stuff. I perhaps it's kind of controversial, my response to that. And I like to quote, I kind of change a quotation of Admiral Isakura Yamamoto from World War II. And I say that I hope that the National Citizens Inquiry Report will awaken a sleeping giant in Canadians and fill them with a terrible rage. Yeah. And but it still remains a toolbox, you know, and you know, I've been in construction all my life, and I've never once seen a carpenter come onto the site and put a toolbox on the site and go home and think that it's going to build itself. So Canadians have this unique toolbox. That's what the NCI report is. It's the largest, most complete compendium of witness testimony in the entire world. And it's the first citizen-led inquiry in the entire world. And Canadians should also know that there was no government money went into this. There was no big company corporate donations. This was all $10 and $15 and $20 donations from everyday Canadians. So that's something we should be proud of. And
wow,
that's
incredible. And how much money did that raise?
You know, since I wasn't involved directly in that, I don't know, but I can tell you that we were spending in the range of about $30,000 per hearing, per three-day hearing process. And so there was eight, so that was probably around $250,000 there. I can also assure your viewers that personally, I spent 2.5 months on the road going to the hearings. And I spent on my own 1,500 man hours writing the report. And of course, I'm one of four. And my contract was for $1. And you know what? They haven't paid my dollar yet. So for those of you who think we got rich doing this, or I was doing it for money, I still haven't got my dollar yet.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Well, you know, it's not a legal contract until you have some consideration, and that $1 consideration needs to be paid. Yeah. So, okay. As we close off here on this segment, and we'll continue our conversation, but where can people find out more information about the NCI?
Come to the, our website. It's nationalcitizensinquiry.ca. And you can, like I said, you can find out all about what we did, how we did it, how we financed it. You can see all of the testimonies. You can download the report for free. And you can download it anonymously, by the way. You don't even have to tell us who you are. You click on the button and you download it. And then it's yours. And I encourage people to do that, because the further we spread this report out, the more impossible it will be for them to make it disappear.
Mm. Excellent. Well, Ken, thank you so much for being with us today, and just keep up the good work, and we will continue our conversation. So, folks, we just want you to know that we will be back again next time as we talk about the issues that have that have risen, really, after going through the experience over those 3 years of 2020 to 2023, but also what does it mean going forward? And so I encourage you to stay with us next time. And until then, I'm Barry Bussey. I'm just a burger flipper, one speaker declared on a makeshift stage that was set up on Wellington Street in front of Center Block of Parliament Hill. I'm just a guy who owns a restaurant who stood up for himself. And he went on about the use of social distancing by government during the pandemic. When you're socially distanced, you are separated from your friends and neighbors. You're isolated. You've made to feel alone. When you speak out and you're made to feel alone, it's scary because you wonder, am I crazy? Does anybody else feel this way? Am I all by myself over here in this little isolated bubble thinking something's wrong? My message to you today, he said, is if you're feeling like that, I'm sure none of you are here. But for those who are watching and aren't here, if that's how you're feeling, you're not alone.